inform.
Religious freedom is about people of faith being able to live out their faith, live out their convictions, no matter where they are.
We equip.
Sacred honor is the courage to speak truth, to live out your free speech.
We also rejoice in our sufferings because we know that suffering produces perseverance, perseverance character, and character hope.
This is At the Core on American Family Radio.
And hi there. It is a Friday here at the Core. Fred Jackson sitting in for Walker today. So good to be with you. And okay, I got a question right off the bat. Hands up, folks out there. If you've been in the military, any branch, if or family member or a good friend, I see a bunch of hands out there. You know, that's one of the reasons that over the last several years, we've been covering the story of the recruitment problems with our military. You've heard all about this, that the desire to enter any of the military branches right now has been extremely low. And the problem hasn't gotten much better since Joe Biden became president, Kamala Harris became vice president, because we have heard reports of games being played as far as, you know, I remember back early on in the Biden years, and they were seeking out information about the worldview of certain people in the military. They might have conservative viewpoints on things. So they wanted to find out about that. And then there was the whole pandemic fiasco. If you don't get the shot, we're going to throw you out. Well, fortunately, there is at least some movement forward now on lawsuits against the military for what it did. But it seems that at least in certain branches of the military, the desire to limit who can be in the military, even though we have these recruitment problems, is still there, all under the guise of this diversity, equity, and inclusion programs that have now really not just the military, but taken over every avenue of government that's out there. And that is why I, with great interest, this headline that came out yesterday from the Daily Caller: new docs shed light on Air Force's goal to reduce, quote, white male population joining officer ranks. All right? Now, you talk about sexism. those are words apparently right out of these documents. And what I'm talking about, apparently what has happened, there is a group out there, it's the Center to Advance Security in America. And it's called CASA for short. And they started requesting records from the Air Force, the Air Force's new officer applicant standards, through a federal transparency request back in 2023. Now, when they didn't get a response, CASA then sued the Air Force to get some records of what was going on. What were the particulars of their diversity, equity, and inclusion programs? Well, they found out a whole bunch of stuff on this. One of the slides, according to this story in the Daily Caller, labeled AFROTC white, end quote, depicts a graph that shows the percentage of white male ROTC officer applicants declining from approximately 60% in fiscal year 2019 to a projected 50% in fiscal year 23. The graph further details how the Air Force's goal is to reduce the percentage. We're talking about white male applicants, ROTC, reduce that percentage down to approximately 43% by fiscal year 2029. Now, the story goes on to say, included in the slide deck are funding requests for diversity recruiting initiatives, including $500,000 for diversity advertising campaigns and $250,000 for influencer engagements. That's all in quotation marks, folks. But here's the one that really got me. In a separate set of documents from as early as 2022, the Air Force, now remember, these are all the Biden years, the Biden-Harris years. The Air Force outlines its efforts to modify ROTC scholarship programs, which they say play an important role in ascension and diversity goals. The Air Force suggests modifying the scholarship models and could remove certain testing barriers to entry for underrepresented groups. Now, I've asked our good producer and friend Bobby Rosa in to join in the conversation. And Bobby, the reason I did that is that you've got some experience in the Air Force.
Yeah, just a few years. Actually, a few decades is probably the easiest way to put it, Fred.
Yeah.
And as we talked about earlier on, I was in both the recruiting arena for 4 years and also for the retention side of the house as well, which means for the better part of a decade, I was very familiar with predominantly the Air National Guard's policies of recruiting and retention.
Yeah.
And it was cohesive in that it assimilated and aligned with what the Air Force's policy was, which is non-discrimination and things of that nature. Everybody has an equal opportunity, an equal shot, provided you meet the mental and physical characteristics of service to your country.
Which would be testing barriers.
Testing barriers, yes. Yes, yes, yes.
And,
yes.
You know, I was in the military. Right. My experience is in Canada.
Right.
And there were testing barriers. And there's a reason for that, Bobby.
That's correct.
Because in the Air Force, depending on where you're involved with it, I happen to be in the pilot training program.
Right.
You have to have some basic math skills.
Indeed.
That helps a bit. You have to have certain, you know, physical attributes.
Mm-hmm.
I remember going to aircrew selection, and they measured from the knee up to my waist and that sort of thing, because you have to
torso height. You got to fit in the jet.
You got to fit inside the cockpit. So there's, you know, I'm not sure how they're going to get around that,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah.
But here's the sad thing in all of this, and maybe we'll get a chance to deal with this a little bit later. We have a problem now starting in our schools with students being able to attain certain levels in mathematics and reading. I was just a few hours ago, actually heard a report on Fox News, Chicago schools. I think reading was 31% reaching what should be a grade 8 level.
Right.
Mathematics was only 19%. Mm. Much the same problem in New York schools, mm-hmm. Despite the fact in New York spends more money per student than any other
than
state.
Any other city.
You yep. know, mm-hmm. that's what we're talking about. But there is a reason for these testing barriers. You've got to have certain skills to do these things.
Mm-hmm.
And what concerns me most, Bobby, is that what the Air Force is proposing here, and it sounds like it's probably has activated these plans, they're now screening people to reduce the number of white males. Whatever happened to the idea, let's just bring in the most qualified. Let's forget about skin color.
Sure.
Let's, male, female, whatever the case may be. Let's look at what the person has the potential to be able to do for this job in the Air Force.
Right. And along those lines, that first of all, that's the prerequisites. You have to have the mental, physical aptitude for any given particular career field or career fields, which the lower your scores, the lower the opportunities you have, if you have an opportunity to enter at all.
Mm-hmm.
So once you've met the barriers, the standards, the gates, if you will, the obstacles of getting in, and there's a number of things in terms of character and societal fit in terms of drug abuse, driving records, things of that nature that can keep you out.
Yeah,
I mean, our old standard was I can go into any high school classroom, I don't care if it's big city, rural, it didn't matter. And just based on the rudiments of trying to enter the Air Force. And for the most part, most military services of the United States as well, and I can automatically disqualify 25% of the students sitting in that classroom.
Yeah.
For those particular aspects that they were not, that they were, have either disqualified themselves through prior characteristics and actions and so forth, or mental aptitude, things of that nature?
You know, we ought to, as a country, want the very best people in our military as possible.
Right.
Because they have one of the most important jobs, our national security.
And those people exist in all walks of life.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with skin color. I mean, let's go back to something as easy as Dr. Martin Luther King. It's not about your skin color. It's about the content of your character, plain and simply.
Yes.
And along those lines, you had your aptitude, and now it's time for, okay, what is it that you want to do for Uncle Sam, as we used to say?
Yeah. And you know, here's the danger of all of this is that we're reducing those requirements at a possible cost of making us much weaker. Mm. You know, I thought here is, as I mentioned, a dailycaller.com story that we're talking about. Well, guess who else is looking at this if they don't know already? China.
Sure.
Russia. Iran. They're looking at this and they're saying, wow, you know, at a time when China, Russia and others are building up the capacity of their military.
And that's fact.
Are building up the capacity of their high-tech side of their military. What we're talking about is possibly compromising in all of those areas in order to appease a DEI program.
Right.
That's
when if I may, Fred, remember that all the services have a demographics program. What is critical, no matter what recruiting station you're assigned to in the country, you are required to recruit toward your demographic outlay. So if the black community is 18% of the demographics, you are to meet and exceed that standard of 18% of representation of the community. It's that simple. Asian Pacific Islanders, same kind of thing. And, you know, name a demographic, name an ethnic class, so you have those same demographics that you're trying to recruit to. And your recruiting program, your advertising program, was geared in that manner.
Yeah, and that makes, you know, sense that you would attempt to recruit from those areas.
Indeed.
But, you know, we've done stories on this as well, and I'm a little bit familiar with the story of what's gone on with lowering recruitment standards. I think it's on the Army side. There's now a pre-boot camp because they did away with the physical qualifications of a person getting in. So they go to this pre-boot camp in order to try to get the person in shape or up to the level that would allow them to go to the
boot. To at least start.
To at least start in the boot camp. And again, this does not achieve the goal of having the strongest military in the world, which we should have, especially now, Bobby, when we're living in a far more dangerous world than we did just a few years ago.
Well put.
Yeah. And so we need the very best. And it's this story. We, by the way, our news team is getting reaction to this. You know, it talked about, and we've done stories on this, how discouraged military families, I mean, families with a history of members being in the military. We're talking about, you know, granddad was in the military, dad was in the military, sons going in the military. Only approximately 57% of service members or military families polled by the Military Family Advisory Network in 23 said they'd recommend joining the service, compared to 74% in just 2019. Mm. We're talking just 4 years.
4 years, yeah.
I tell you what, this ought to be one of those objectives during this election campaign. You need to be asking the candidates, Republicans, Democrat, whatever they are, where do you stand on these issues? We ought to be concerned about this because our national security is at stake in all of this. And we want our very best to be recruited and to be encouraged to be part of our military. All right, much more ahead on this Friday edition of The Core. We'll be right back. We're going to be talking again about the fallout over that debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris.
At the Core podcast are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
And indeed, welcome back to this Friday edition of At the Core. Fred Jackson sitting in for Walker today. Here's the headline this week. ABC debate disaster already punishing ratings because America's sick of journal lies. That's the headline, folks, from the New York Post. What are they referring to? Well, they're referring to the ABC News crew who acted as moderators. No, they weren't moderators. They were part of the Democratic Party team. They were there holding the hand of Vice President Kamala Harris to help her along and try to make Donald Trump look as bad as they possibly could. Well, apparently it has cost ABC News and its ratings. Their ratings are actually down, according to this, a 12% drop in the wake of that debate. Do I feel sorry for them? No, I don't. Because they were a disaster. And it was proven right off the bat. What they corrected, fact-checked, whatever you want to call it, Donald Trump, 5 times. But when it came to Kamala Harris, no problem at all. What the words that she spoke, I guess, were just 100% gospel truth. So shame on David Muir and shame on Lindsay Davis, the two moderators, for how they handled this. But what I want to particularly zero in on right now, there's been some other fact-checking of the moderators that has already gone on. You know, the usual thing that they try to label Donald Trump with regards to Charlottesville, with regards to what he said about bloodbath. And we all know when he was talking about Donald Trump, was talking about bloodbath with regards to election results. He was talking about the death of the auto industry. But, you know, that was totally distorted by the Democrats, and the moderators just allowed that to go on and on. But also there were others, some very serious, serious fact-checking that should have gone on about what was said about abortion and abortion laws in this country and abortion practices. And to help take us through that right now, we're talking with Sue Leibel. She's the Midwest Regional Director of the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America, one of the leading pro-life groups in this country. Sue, welcome to the Core.
Oh, thank you so much for having me today.
Great to have you. All right. Was reading a press release from you folks, and you said lie number one was abortions don't happen in the 9th month of pregnancy. We heard that on debate night, didn't we? But you are saying that is absolutely not true.
That is right. In fact, we sent a letter to ABC News and both of the moderators the next morning with a number of facts that they clearly allowed to go on without fact-checking. And this is definitely one of them. Late-term abortion does happen. There are 10 states and the District of Columbia that have no limits. They allow abortions in up to the 9th month, up until the day a baby's born, even. And there are about 10,000 or more a year that still occur in these later stages in these states. I think they're much more common than Americans are led to believe. One prominent researcher who is pro-abortion is quoted as saying, when you really think about that, as real people, that's a pretty big number.
Oh, absolutely. You know, what troubles me is, you know, the records are there for this kind of thing. But for the moderators not to say stop, because, you know, the moderators, I've heard interviews with them post-debate because they've been rightly criticized, and they said, we did our research. Oh, really? Because it doesn't take too much, because we've done stories about this, Sue, over the last several years of these late-term abortions. That information is out there. And, you know, I would be shocked if you said you wrote a letter to the moderators. Did they respond to you?
No, we haven't heard back yet, to my knowledge.
Totally shocked.
No.
There's a surprise.
You know what's also sad about that? Is because this all leads women to think that they can just, you know, get an abortion at any stage. And it's actually much more dangerous for the mother, too. Obviously, it's dangerous for the child. The child can feel it at that stage as well. But they're also throwing women under the bus, too, when they don't tell the truth.
You know, Sue, if it was just one state, it would be horrible. But as you're saying, this is happening across the country in many states.
That's correct. That is correct. In some states with these ballot initiatives, good, nice people are fooled into voting for them that puts them in the Constitution that guarantees a right to abortion in the state constitution. And the fine print, which hardly any of us read when we go vote on a ballot question, is up until abortion, up until birth, full-on access with no restrictions, no time restrictions, and no health and safety requirements. So this is a battle. I mean, it is a very serious, deep, deep battle in America. But there are many states that do late-term abortions.
You know, it was very interesting. You're probably aware of this. There was a pro-life group that, in the wake of the debate and these claims that were made by Kamala Harris and the moderators, there's a pro-life group that called a Planned Parenthood clinic. And the young lady who made the call said, "I'm 34 weeks pregnant. Can I get an abortion?" And the Planned Parenthood clinic, I forget where it was, answered in the affirmative, "Yes, you can." Mm-hmm. This occurred within, I think, 48 hours of the debate. You would think that ABC would do something with that if they were a true news agency.
Oh, I know. In Maryland, and this is not an isolated incident, but in the state of Maryland, there's an all trimester abortion clinic that reportedly has 10, 15 abortions a week that are nearly all after the fifth month. And these are much harder to do. They are much more risky for the mother. And certainly the baby is dismembered and can feel that. So this is a tragic, tragic thing we're talking about. And sometimes when I go on the radio or I'm talking on media calls, I want to also say to our listeners that this is hard to talk about. And it's also so shocking. Some people, I've run into people that don't really believe it. You know, maybe people that are even, and polling shows this, upwards into 70, 77, 78% of people, even pro-choice people, want some abortion, but they didn't mean this. This is, nobody thinks this should happen, right? This is really disgusting to the American people, including many people who are pro-choice.
Yes.
This is dangerous, and it's brutal, and it's barbaric.
We're talking with Sue Leibel. She's the Midwest Regional Director of the Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. We're talking about some of the false statements that were made during the debate that were not corrected or fact-checked by the moderators. Sue, lie number two, as your group outlined, the lie is there is no state in which abortion after birth is legal. You have an objection to that.
Oh, absolutely. That is also 100% inaccurate. Now, what we really mean here by this is that if a baby survives an abortion and comes out alive, what we're talking about is letting that baby die, not giving that baby resuscitation, any sort of warmth or medical care, but allowing it to die. You might remember then Governor of Virginia, Ralph Northam, was talking on a program and mentioned that we'll just let it lay there and then the parents will discuss what to do with the doctor. So it too happens usually if in this form of neglect. In fact, the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention estimate that sometime in the first decade of the 2000s, 2003 to 2014, about 150 babies died this way. And that's just the record keeping that we do have. You know, abortion record keeping and statistical record keeping in this country is voluntary, and not all states report. So we have trouble getting the data, but the data we do have, we cull over very closely. The other thing I would tell you, there's actually an organization of people that were that baby that was accidentally born in a failed abortion. It's called the Abortion Survivors Network. And there are people who have banded together to go tell their stories. Some have some disabilities because of it, but all survived and are living their lives now and trying to get the word out about babies being borderline after abortion. Many states have a law that says if a baby is accidentally born alive, then you have to treat that baby as the second patient. That baby is now a patient. You have to call in a doctor and try to save that baby. And so many states have that law, Born Alive Protection Act. And wouldn't you know it, in Minnesota, Governor Waltz ended that practice in Minnesota so that babies born alive would not get the medical care. In fact, when he was in Congress, and you may remember he was a congressman before he was governor of Minnesota, he accidentally voted for that bill, the bill that would say that you have to give the baby medical care. He apologized for voting for it. He got confused. Kamala Harris also has voted against that Born Alive bill herself. So this is nothing new. I mean, in state houses and in Congress, they've been tossing this bill back and forth for many years about whether or not to resuscitate and offer medical care to babies born alive. I'm not trying to be political when I say this, but I've yet to see a Democrat vote yes.
I want to just mention in this press release from your organization, Susan B. Anthony, you mentioned there are 15 states that now allow infanticide. Mm-hmm. And folks, this is an election year, and that's why I want to read these 15 states. Alaska, Colorado, Connecticut, Hawaii, Idaho, Illinois, Maryland, Minnesota, you mentioned, Sue, New Jersey, mm-hmm. New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, Oregon, Utah, and Vermont. Now, folks, if you're listening in any of these states, this is something that you ought to be very concerned. Listen, before I go any further, Sue, where can people get this information? Tell us about your website and where they can get this information.
Thank you. Yes, our website is, Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America. So it's sbaprolife.org, sbaprolife.org. We also have a scientific and medical research education arm, which is where we get a lot of our statistics. And this is what they do, is they look at the science, they look at the statistics, they track down all the journal articles and all of these things we're talking about. That is called the Charlotte Lozier Institute. And that is Lozier, L-O-Z-I-E-R, LozierInstitute.org, for lots of medical facts and figures.
All right, let's go back to the debate just about 10 days ago. You say the third lie that was told, the lie is pro-life laws make it criminal for a doctor to provide health care. You say no truth in that.
Absolutely not. In fact, this is becoming a very hot topic in the medical community. I think in a lot of red states where abortion has been limited, the pro-choice doctors and people in the medical community are not very happy about that and are scaring women, or they're refusing to treat women. So in the parlance of the abortion world, abortion is actually a procedure, the purpose of which is to terminate the life of the child. That the whole intent is to intentionally kill the child. Medical care, on the other hand, is trying to help someone get better or giving them treatment. And so if a woman has a dangerous health limiting problem with her pregnancy, if she has an ectopic pregnancy or has had a miscarriage, things like that, that is actually health care. And we have looked at the laws in all 50 states. Even in states that have zero, that legally have zero abortion in their law, they all allow for life-saving care for the mother in dangerous, you know, pregnancy situations. What they try to do is they try to treat both patients, the mother and the baby. But if they have to separate them, if they have to do other things to save her life, that is not an abortion. And so they are purposely confusing and Kamala Harris, Vice President Harris, and others are just pouring into that narrative and making women think that they're not going to get health care. And it's not only wrong, it's dangerously wrong.
You know, it's interesting when the Democrats talk about reproductive health care, they're talking about abortion. They try to dress it up with that phrase, but they're talking, Sue, about abortion and dressing it up with something that sounds normal mm-hmm. and decent.
Mm-hmm. That's how we got this. That's what they did in the beginning with the word choice, too. But abortion is not healthcare. Abortion is actually a procedure. And the majority, 98 point something percent of abortions are done on healthy women who have healthy babies. Mm-hmm. They're done for convenience. There are tragic situations where a woman has a pregnancy that has something's medically very wrong. And that's when healthcare takes over to try to save them both. And that is always legal.
Sue, what we're talking about makes these amendments that are being voted on in November so important. People need to educate themselves about these amendments. Most of them are pro-abortion amendments, and you need to be educated on this. It is taking the life of a human being, and God's word says that is murder. Sue Leibel, the Midwest Regional Director of Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America. Sue, great to have you with us today. We thank you so much, and continue this all-important work.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the opportunity.
All right. Yes. Susan B. Anthony, Pro-Life America. Go to their website, folks. Get this information. Arm yourself with this information so that you can confront those people running for office and certainly be educated about the amendments being voted on. All right. Much more ahead on the Friday edition of At the Core. Don't go away.
At the Core podcasts are available at AFR.net. Now, back to At the Core on American Family Radio.
And welcome back to this Friday edition of The Core. Good to have you with us as we wrap up another week, another busy week news-wise. And joining me in studio, as he usually does on these Fridays at The Core, is Chris Woodward from American Family News.
Hey there. Second time this week.
So you've been a busy guy.
Two days in a row.
Bobby validated my parking and everything. Yeah.
It all comes at a price.
That's right. Chris, you wear a lot of hats in the newsroom, and amongst them is you're dealing with pro-life issues, mm-hmm. like we've just been talking with Sue about from Susan B. Anthony, a lot of legal issues, and certainly in this election campaign, issues regarding life, mm-hmm. as we've been talking about, abortion. But also, we had some disturbing news out of Kentucky this week.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes. The governor of Kentucky, who was just recently reelected there, Democratic Governor Andy Beshear, signed an executive order that, in his words, bans conversion therapy for minors.
Now, we need a definition.
Yes. Yeah. Conversion therapy basically is any kind of effort to, in Beshear's words, change somebody's mind. In other words, if somebody thinks they are LGBTQ or they are having unwanted same-sex attractions, you can't try to change them or talk them out of it. And that's the big issue, because for a long time now, there have been people who go to a counselor, a pastor, a priest, a faith leader, saying, hey, I'm having thoughts that I don't want. I'm having feelings that I don't want, unwanted feelings and thoughts, maybe even about gender identity. That's a new thing in our culture today. And you can't even go now in Kentucky to a pastor or a priest, a counselor, a faith leader, to talk about these things based on the governor's executive order. So as soon as this story broke from the Associated Press, which is a news outlet everybody and their brother runs, I reached out to David Walls at Kentucky Family Foundation, and Mr. Walls pointed out to AFN that this executive order from the governor, it's not a law. He didn't sign a bill into law. It's an executive order.
Because the Republicans have fought this,
correct? Yes. Yeah. There have been some legislators in the state of Kentucky that have tried to get a conversion therapy ban passed as legislation for a few sessions now, but actually it's been fewer and fewer legislators in number because they know good and well that this is a religious freedom issue, it's a First Amendment free speech issue, you are preventing somebody from going to, on a voluntary basis, someone for help. And so David Wall said this is wrong. It needs to be put out there that it's wrong. And I actually have some sound here from David Walls talking about this very issue and the concerns for families in Kentucky. Clip 13.
We believe Kentucky parents and their children should be free to seek counseling, including faith-based Christian counseling, on issues of sexuality and identity when they need to do so.
Now, in addition to Mr. Walls, I reached out to Liberty Counsel, Matt Staver's group. Matt Staver is the founder and chairman of Liberty Counsel. And the reason I reached out to Liberty Counsel is because they are known for going around the country and fighting so-called conversion therapy or talk therapy bans, as they're often referred to, also referred to. An attorney, Jonathan Alexander, said lawsuits will happen in Kentucky. It's not a matter of if, but when lawsuits are filed. And lawsuits, he says, are needed. Clip 14.
There needs to be pushback so the individuals that are seeking this help can get it.
So we're probably going to be talking about this issue. And I think one of the reasons why is because the timing of this executive order is very interesting. The governor was just recently reelected, and we have an election in 40 some odd days.
Yeah.
So this makes it a national issue. Candidates are going to be forced to respond to it. Moderators, if there is a debate sometime again, are going to ask candidates for it. What do you think about this? And why aren't you in favor of helping kids, things of that sort? I mentioned the Associated Press. They are completely on the side of Governor Beshear here and making it about affirming how a child feels, knowing full well that there are people out there that say, hey, what a kid may be thinking today, he or she might regret tomorrow, especially if they aren't told about the harms and the negatives. And that's one of the things that a pastor and a counselor would be able to do. But unfortunately, now they can't do that in Kentucky because this executive order forbids them from having that conversation.
Well, that's the issue here. The intimidation factor for pastors, for Christian counselors in all of this. And this is not the first time this issue has come up.
No.
In other jurisdictions, this has happened. And I'm sure in other states, are there other states that actually have made a law against conversion therapy?
Yeah, some states have. I want to say Minnesota is in that category, but it could be even a state where a city has taken action where they prevent it. I know for a fact Liberty Counsel has fought city policies or laws banning so-called conversion therapy bans.
Well, as I say, pastors, Christian counselors, perhaps a teacher in a Christian school ought to take note of this, of what's going on, because the aim is for you not, is to be silent.
Right.
So that if a young person in your youth group, let's say, or a young person in your congregation was to come to you with concerns about how they're feeling about these issues, whether it's, you know, same-sex attraction, you know, transgenderism, and that sort of thing, you now, according to these laws, have to be somewhat careful. But, you know, as Christians, we are called upon to abide by God's word. And a pastor is a shepherd.
Mm-hmm.
And a shepherd is to look after their sheep. And so, number one, these laws, these executive orders like Governor Beshear in Kentucky need to be fought in the courts.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully it will be done so in Kentucky. But number two, you have an obligation according to God's word. If you have a young person in your congregation, your youth group, whatever the case may be, to be loyal to God's word and to reach out with in compassion to these youth, and it's mostly young people.
Yeah, there are so many issues and angles and concerns here with this story. Just on the election issue, this is all the more, it makes elections all that much more important, because when you go to vote for a candidate, you're not just picking that person, but you're picking the person that's going to perhaps choose the judge that's going to hear these kinds of cases. And while you may be listening in another part of the country, you have no affiliation or connection whatsoever with Kentucky, you might think, well, you know, this doesn't impact me. It can, because what is used in court or what a judge writes in his or her opinion is used in other courts. So Kentucky today, your state tomorrow, unless courts finally put a stop to this kind of stuff.
But it's kind of just another chapter in the radical LGBTQ plus agenda that's out there. You know, Chris, it always irks me when the Human Rights Campaign, which is the nation's most powerful, largest homosexual activist group, you know, when they first started pushing their agenda back many years ago, they said, we just want the right to do for ourselves, mm-hmm. to carry out our activities without it being illegal. We're not going to try to impose our agenda on other people.
Right.
Well, big surprise, that has turned mm-hmm. out to be a bold-faced
yeah,
lie.
It's almost like government. You give them an inch, and they'll take the circumference of the earth.
Yeah.
So, what they're telling you right now or what you might read in the form of a quote in a newspaper article could be completely different to what they do next year or, in the next decade.
You know, as you say, that's why people have got to pay attention during this election period mm-hmm. to what the agenda is, to be looking at the platform, to be challenging the candidates, Republican and Democrat. Where do you stand on this issue?
Right. And one of the things that occurred to me is when you look at like the issue of abortion, Vice President Harris and a number of other Democrats will say things like government has no place in the doctor's room.
Yeah, right.
But why does government have no problem getting inside the consultation room between a person and a faith leader or a counselor? They don't care there. It's only in abortion that they want absolutely no restrictions.
They want government power inside the pastor's office. Mm-hmm. That's a scary thing.
Yeah, eventually they're going to, we've already seen this in places. Houston, Texas always comes to mind, where you had a mayor there at one point that wanted all the pastor's sermons to make sure that they weren't preaching against her and what she was wanting to do there.
Yeah.
Really crazy stuff. And that, again, is why people need to care about these issues, but also people need to reach out to and find legal assistance. We talked about this 2 days ago on this very program. There's a ton of law firms out there that do take these kinds of things. They're happy to take them, and they also take them at no cost to the person, assuming they do have an argument to make in court.
What else are you up to these days?
Well, speaking of other things in court, this one involves some nuns in New York State. But a group of nuns are urging the U.S. Supreme Court to block New York regulations requiring faith-based organizations to cover abortions in their employee health insurance plans. If this sounds like something other nuns have gone through, there's a reason for that. That there have been other nuns that have gone through that. But unfortunately, we've never gotten a high court ruling saying thou shalt never do this again.
Hmm.
And there is an interesting quote in here from Eric Baxter, vice president and senior counsel at Beckett Fund. They're representing the nuns here in their request at the U.S. Supreme Court. Mr. Baxter says, quote, New York's abortion mandate is so extreme that not even Jesus, Mother Teresa, or Mahatma Gandhi would qualify for an exemption. Justices should exempt religious organizations once and for all so they can focus on caring for the most vulnerable. I talked about this with Ed Vitagliano and company on today's issues. A lot of people listening right now might not be Catholic. They might be, Baptist or Methodist, Protestant, non-denominational, something of that nature. But we all need to pay attention to issues involving other people of faith, because how a court comes down against them will impact you. And you kind of think, well, nuns aren't going to get abortion. This is ridiculous. They just need to find something else. Nuns don't want to pay for something that they view as murder.
Yeah.
As a sin.
Mm-hmm.
And so if a government is going to say you must do this regardless of how you choose to live your life and what religion says, if a government can get away with doing this to nuns, they will come after you, even if you're Baptist or some other church across the street from the convent.
Well, it's another case of the government's big hand wanting to force people to accept a far left agenda.
Yeah.
That's where we are today.
Yeah.
You know, there's a commonality. I hope, folks, that you're realizing this. There's a commonality between these stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the government imposing a far-left agenda. And it's usually, we've talked about this before, it's usually the government coming after conservative Christians.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that over and over again, it seems to be the case.
Right. You know, I mean, I've never seen every press release from every, you know, freedom from religion type group. But more often than not, they seem to only want freedom from Christianity. Yeah. You never see them in the news complaining about. Yeah. And even they'll even pick Christian battles. Like, I've never in my life, and I don't want this, but I've never in my life seen a Freedom From Religion Foundation lawsuit or letter telling Joe Biden to stop talking about God and prayer and faith. Mm. But they have no problem telling a teacher, hey, you can't have a Bible on your personal bookshelf.
Yes. Any more?
Yes.
We've only got a few minutes left, but
yes.
Go to it.
Speaking of Freedom From Religion Foundation and Alabama, an Alabama teacher has been told to stop posting Bible verses on a whiteboard. This is after a Freedom From Religion Foundation sent a letter to her high school in Glencoe, Alabama, which is in Etowah County, Alabama, if I pronounce that correctly. I used to live there. I should know how to say it. But Glencoe High School is the high school, and the teacher has apparently posted some Bible verses on a whiteboard and put them on TikTok. I reached out to...
Wait a minute now. Is this a whiteboard at her house?
No, in the classroom.
In the classroom.
In the public classroom.
That's fine. Just wanted to clarify
that.
Yeah,
thank you. So I reached out to First Liberty Institute, which is kind of the law firm known for Establishment Clause cases. In other words, sharing your faith somehow, some way. Attorney Keisha Russell said, you know, look, I haven't seen the videos that this teacher supposedly posted on TikTok, and I'm reading her quote here, but I certainly don't trust the legal analysis of this atheist organization. Russell went on to tell me it's perfectly constitutional for a teacher to use quotes out of the Bible as she would any other secular quote or out of any book or from any other famous person to motivate or educate her students. She went on to say that, in her personal legal opinion, oftentimes FFRF will send these legal threats out. There's really nothing backing up their opinions. It's just their opinion. And she actually went so far as to suggest that schools just throw the letter away.
Yeah, that's what they should do. Because in this country, Christians still have the freedom to say, my beliefs are based on Scripture.
Mm-hmm.
And what this teacher was doing was putting... Yes, the Bible is a historic document.
Yes.
And she is simply quoting that historic document.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think we talked about this. I'm not sure it was just in the newsroom the other day, but we wondered, let's go up to Michigan.
Okay.
Because there's a fairly large population of Muslims there. And I'm sure maybe in some schools in larger Michigan communities that, you know, if a Muslim was quoting the Quran, a Muslim teacher, do you think there would be legal opposition to that?
There might be somebody that would voice a concern, but it's nowhere near the level of what we see around the country, even in states like Michigan, where atheist groups and other non-believers always pitch a hissy fit when somebody...
I'm just trying to make the point. Most of these legal cases, the vast majority involve Christians.
Mm-hmm.
That seems to
yes.
be the case. All right, Chris Woodward, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And thank you so much, folks, for joining us as always here at The Core throughout the week. Walker will be back in the chair on Monday. In the meantime, we hope that you have a wonderful weekend, a blessed weekend, and be a blessing to others. We'll see you again real soon.
You've heard a lot about saving babies on this show. That's because it's important to me personally. And let me just be frank with you. We need to save them. That is why we have partnered with Preborn, the nation's leader in introducing mothers with unplanned pregnancies to their babies. And once she hears the heartbeat and sees that precious life growing inside of her, she is twice as likely to choose life. Now that's a miracle. But quite honestly, if we don't save them, who will? Preborn receives no government funding, so their work is completely dependent on us. Preborn has rescued over 280,000 babies, and that's not all. They provide love, support, and counseling for up to 2 years for free, saving lives and souls. One ultrasound is just $28, or 140 helps rescue 5 babies' lives. Abortion doesn't stop, so we can't. Together, you and I can save lives. Just call #250 on your cell and say the keyword baby. That's #250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.